Life can always use more Cedar Point. And right now, you can get more Cedar Point for less with the Fun Day Bundle for just $74.99. Each bundle gets you admission, parking, and all-day dining for one low price. That means more coasters like Steel Vengeance and more nostalgic fun in the boardwalk area. But you better hurry because this bundle won't last. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
There's some great plot twists that had me literally out loud go like, what the fuck? Oh my God.
If you describe pasta to an Italian and it works, you get the approval.
Maybe this is sacrilege here, but what? I got sort of Kaigan vibes.
What?
Welcome everyone to a Tudor Realm podcast episode. My name is Richard.
My name is Austin.
Today we're doing another one of my favorite things. We're talking about Dungeon Crawler Carl. This time it's the Anarchist Cookbook. I'm excited to talk about this one. And then again, I'm always excited about Dungeon Crawler Carl.
And it's book three. We did books book 1, 2. Now we're on the three. Spoiler free for a little bit.
Yes. First few minutes, spoilers up to book 2. That's free range. We're allowed to talk spoilers for that in the spoiler-free section. Then we're going into book 3.
If you want to know what we're talking about there, we have the first Dungeon Crawler Carl book that we uploaded, the very first book. That is our pitch to start reading the series. And
so, now we're warning to you guys, we are spoiling things for the first 2 books. That's about it.
Then let's get it. So this book, Rich, book 3... Before you read the book, because you've already read up to book 6 at this point. You binged them.
I'm caught up. I binge read them all. They're amazing. I love them. However, you were saying.
Yeah, can we get from you a little sneak peek on, is this the best one of the 3 so far? How would you rank the first 3 books?
Ooh, I would actually say it goes 2-1, then 3.
3 being your least favorite.
Yeah. So, okay.
But you're still happy though. You're still.
I'm still happy. I think this is it's still a really good book, and the next ones are even much, much better.
For some monsters out there who still listened on, who haven't read books 1 and 2, book 1 starts us in at a world where everything's crushed, aliens invade, and our main character Carl is thrown into these dungeon games that is televised to the alien population. In the galaxy. Yep, that's our basic. It's a little RPG where it's a leveling up kind of system. Book one goes through level 1 and 2. Book 2 goes through level 3, which was a little bit different, and the setting was different. Book 3 now. Goes through level 4, yes. We're on book 3, and before we spoil book 3, or get into the whole review for this, it has a lot. So this level takes place with trains.
Yes, that... Trains are a thing.
And do you want to explain how the train system works to our fellow viewer out there?
No. No, I don't. However, I do have... I want to spread some love here. It will be linked, I believe, in the description below if our patron member is allowing it. But Fry actually did a whole map.
Yeah.
Trying to map out and the details of this level.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing job. I was thoroughly impressed. If they're okay with sharing it, I will share it down in the description below.
Fry apparently detailed it so much that he went, wait a second, the author, Matt Dinneman, screwed up with what he set up in the book.
Yes.
Like Fry, he plotted out the train going, wait, that doesn't make sense with what you set up. Whereas when we were reading the train system, still keeping it spoiler-free, it's a more confusing... level.
It's supposed to be confusing, but also
purposefully confusing. Yeah. Is that why it's your least favorite of the 3 so far?
Yes, it's plot, and for me, the plot and the description got a bit confusing. I was confused on exactly where I was and where I am, and like just everything around it was hard to wrap my head around.
Right.
And I think the plot was. I know it's supposed to be a confusing level. But I think it went too far, and that even by the end, kind of didn't really understand what was going on. But
this is also, Goodreads agrees, the online review for this is a 4.52. It's the lowest score for all of the Dungeon Crawler books.
Still 4.52.
Still heavy numbers right there. And for if you guys want to read the books, all links in the description below, by the way. But this is a 4.52, the lowest on Goodreads. But more importantly, because we need a spoiler, so we're at book three already.
Yeah.
What's your spoiler-free overall Richard Rambler rating for
book three? RRR. RRR. I give it this a 3.75.
Out of 5 stars.
Out of 5 stars.
Really good.
I think it's really good. It's held back by the complexity of the train level is a bit much.
Got it.
Absent that, I would have rated it higher.
I also gave it a 3.75 out of 5 stars on the dot. Really good book.
Dang.
And if you look at the previous ratings here, the book one and two, you gave, I think, 4 fives or yeah. Like excellent stuff. I've given all three of the first books the same score. I think the quality for Dungeon Crawler Carl, at least for the first three books, they all have different things that they do better than the other books. They all have different areas where they shine. For me, this book shined with I was more emotionally invested and the characters love them even more than the prior two books. So I am more into the story. But then he throws in this crazy world where I'm like, okay, now I'm less understanding what's going on. Whereas the previous two books, I was building up momentum. I was really curious with the world. This world took a step back. Characters and emotional investment took a step forward where now I'm going, Matt Dinneman, Jeff Hayes, I'm starting to get the vibe here. And the confusion didn't take away from just enjoying the book.
Oh, yeah. Like you said, the characters. I was fine being confused in these chapters because the characters were just so enjoyable to be around. And you really pull on the heartstrings when some of these characters are in danger. I'm like, quickly in this book, one of the characters quickly went from I thought the character was going to be tossed aside in this book, like going character from book two, going like, is this character like it's fine? Yeah, I don't know why the character's here, but it's fine. Probably going to get rid of the character next book, or they're going to split, go their own separate ways. And now I'm like, no, don't leave. Don't leave.
I think people know who you're around. Talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's go spoiler talk. Okay.
Right into it.
Spoiler
yeah.
time. This just to let everybody know how we function with BookTube, if you're here, these videos consecutively get lower and lower and lower views, but fuck you, YouTube. We're talking Dungeon Crawler because we want to. We're book three, and we're just going to talk spoilers with people who can't listen on. So many people
can't
listen.
We can only do so many romantic-y tier lists before we go insane. Something for us.
So listen.
This is for us,
for the
not
few
for
of you there. That, you know, I think this video is more for those people that have read Dungeon Crawler like in the future from us publishing this and go back to look at this. This is for you that have
Coop from our Patreon, this video is for you.
Ah.
Yeah.
Coop.
That's good old Coop.
So we're talking spoilers. Just looking, we've weeded out.
By the way, join our Patreon for book clubs. It's great. It's fun. You give us money. We give you our time and effort and talk to you about books. And we have cool community. Also, we got hoodies. Democracy is cringe. Go ahead. Click the link in the description.
That's not a hoodie.
That's sweatshirt.
Yep.
We also have hoodies, hats, mugs, bookmarks that we're actually proud of. It's great.
So
go do that.
We just doubled down with first. So we're talking spoilers of a Dungeon Crawler book three book. Not many people have read. And we plugged merch and everything. So we've weeded out even more with the algorithm. We have the true people who want to hear.
We have the true Tudor Ramble fans. There we go.
The true who have either read this book or just listened
fans
to it.
Fans is
Ramble.
A strong word.
Yeah.
The strong Tudor Ramble audience?
The strong solidarity of enjoy your time sometimes.
The background listeners.
Those people.
Background listeners.
We will try, for those background listeners this episode, we'll try to talk outside of Dungeon Crawler, like, relate it to the real world, especially in thought-provokingness.
True.
That could be very interesting, that section. Okay, so we're talking spoilers now. First category, emotional impact. What'd you give it out of 5 stars?
I give this one a 4.0 out of 5. I think
so did I. Forced her onto that. So we're 2 for 2 now.
I think we may.
Okay.
We make it close. Okay.
So you gave it 4-star. You think it's great?
Yeah. I mean, I'm falling in love with these characters, even though the plot sometimes is confusing. I thought the action scenes were really invigorating. There's some great plot twists that had me literally out loud go like, what the fuck? Oh, my God. We're in spoiler territory, by the way, so I could say it. When Katya killed Hecla.
Yeah.
Ah!
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I actually had a pause audiobook moment. Whoa, what? Did I hear that right? Where he set it up so well with thinking, okay, Hecla's going to be this long-term obstacle and tension and drama between Hecla and Katya. Is Katya going to leave? This is going to get pulled. Because the only thing interesting about Katya at the time was the whole Hecla intervention. So I'm like, okay, this has to go somewhere deep. No.
No.
No. Just die.
Dead.
Die.
Was she the number one crawler? Like number three?
I think Lucia Mars number one. So yeah. It was like she was
number two or number three.
Something like that. Yeah.
And just like dead. Like, oh. I love how well that just – it again, it sets up the expectations that everyone is on – like everyone's on a knife's edge.
Yeah.
Anyone can die at any point. You see all these characters become so powerful and they have all these abilities and items and things, and really they're one mistake away from death. That's a great moment. It brings so much tension to the other characters.
It keeps you on edge. That was a needed moment because in the previous two books, you think everyone's coasting and these are kind of building up for a big payoff later. But just in the snap of a fingers, look, Hecla's gone. Just like that. And the way that he set it up, because this could be a cheaper author trick where you introduce a new thing and then do something with that plot element you just introduced. But because of how this world's set up, where you just figure out, oh, by the way, Katya has this thing where she can just mole over anybody. It's kind of...
Well, it was set up previously in this book that she can't... I think it was even set up
Not book one or two, right?
I think it was set up in book two.
Oh, then I missed it.
It was mentioned, but she doesn't like using it.
Okay.
It was kind of like...
But we didn't know the details of it. Is that correct?
Because yeah.
To me, when I was hearing it, I was hearing like the details of it for the first time, where it was explained. It was kind of info dumped going, here's how it works, by the way. And by the way, if it also isn't very accurate, and that's how she kills Hecla.
Thing is, maybe this is sacrilege here, but what? I got Sword of Kaigan vibes.
What? No spoilers for Sword of Kaigan, though, for people.
There's a moment where in Sword of Kaigan, a big important moment comes, and we have a slow info dump moment of just kind of explaining things going on and the narrator giving us some time to
reflect.
Yeah. And like the thing has not happened yet, but the narrator is going toward it. And you know, like you go, oh no, please don't let it be so. And then the scene happens. That's what I was feeling, because when Matt Dinneman or the narrator starts talking about and narrating Katya's ability, I start thinking to myself, oh my God, they're going to kill Hecla. No, it's a game. No, it can't happen. No. But you know it's coming, and then it happens, and it's so satisfying.
Exactly.
It's stretching out this sudden moment to be really intense.
Yes. Where that cheaper author could have made that so much less intense by, you could properly set it up. That's a way – I shouldn't say cheaper author. Fantastic authors do that. But it did not bother me one bit that was introduced right before. Then, boom, you get that. Like you said, it kind of draws out the tension a lot. So that is the biggest moment for the book. Did you have another – just you had a fun time generally. What made it high was
I enjoyed several of the different fighting moments, the battles of where, you know, the maestro comes back as a god and is trying to kill Carl, and Carl seems like back against the wall. A brutal fight of it's not a fight to win, it's a fight to survive, and just all of Carl throwing out all of his little tricks to just try and survive was exciting, I think. And then just the ultimate solution to it, it's great.
So the solution to some of the world stuff was less – I was less invested in. I was invested in the smaller moments, like as we're building with Princess Donna and Carl. Then we'll get into the characters. But just the small moments, like Princess Donna always wanting to sleep with Carl. Like, get in here, Carl! Get in bed, Carl! It's just so great. And you get those – you get those breathers a lot in this book. A lot of you get more of the breathers as mm-hmm. we progress through these books. I think the one payoff moment that didn't work for me and why it doesn't get higher is the end with all the trains, and as Carl's figuring this out, and he goes like, "Aha, that's it!" And the trains are being explained, and like there's this payoff moment. I'm going like, I don't feel paid off because I have no idea how the trains function, which that's more of a world thing and plot thing we'll get into later. Mm-hmm. But just on the emotional payoff, like I thought it was a great fun ride with the ending being like, okay, I was confused, but I still had fun is my yeah. overall enjoyment.
Well, especially we're talking about the characters here. I loved, the emotional.
Yeah, the emotional, yeah, yeah.
I felt so much more connected to the other crawlers and Carl's yeah. place in how by the end of the book where Carl could save himself and not just, oh, he could save himself, but he should save the others. It would put him at a significant disadvantage and yeah. he's risking a lot to help others. And he does it anyway, and it's a good thing. And how he's pushing all the other crawlers to be better and how he saves thousands of people to do that. And
he cares about people and the NPCs.
Yes. Yeah. And it's, I know it's a simple thing, like, oh, look, the main character's a good guy. I get it. Like, on a surface level, if you're just talking about it on the surface, sure, it's pretty basic. But when reading it of this huge death game and how everything, again, the entire game is made to make you a worse person, and Carl keeps resisting it and figuring out new and clever ways to be a good person.
Makes you want to root for him more and more.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And just now you see the connections of the other crawlers and how they see him is really enjoyable. The other crawlers are starting to look up to him and realize that, like, oh my God, like we're here just surviving, and he's going out of his way to help save us. How many of them have done that? So that's an enjoyable time.
So you just felt overall more invested in just the whole of Carl, all the other characters, just
all the connections yeah. between each other and all the humans and how they're coming together is yeah. really heartwarming.
Yeah. Then we can talk about thought provoking this next category. What mm-hmm. was this book trying to get across? What would you give that out of 5 stars for thought provoking the message?
Now, this is something we can talk about more.
Yeah.
I gave it a 3.75. I think it's really good.
Rich.
What?
I gave it a 3.75. Uh-oh. I think it's also really good. This has not happened. I don't think we've gone 3 for 3 ever.
Yeah, that's pretty surprising. Whoa,
okay, so why'd you preface it with that going? Like, okay, let's...
Well, I think later books gets more into the nuance and details. So for sure. this book specifically, the ideas that we're kind of getting across is, I think we're trying to get a sense of community and the overall message of we are stronger together. Then don't let the enemy divide you. Roughly is kind of the message of this book. I know it's kind of the message of the whole story, but for this one, we have on two fronts of the Anarchist Cookbook, of it being not just Carl being in league with the other crawlers and coming together with his fellow humans, but now he's in league with all the past crawlers that had this book, and they're working together to take down the system. So then you have that, the cookbook, and then you have him working with others like Batista and trying to work with Hecla, now Katya, and all the other, you know, the Nemani? What's her name?
Yeah, Nemani.
Nemani. Yeah. Working Nemani's team and everything. So that's overall the message, which is yeah. a good message. I think it's well done. I just don't think it's – I'm not going to give it like a 4 or 5 or anything.
Oh, yeah. Nothing great. You've seen stuff done like that before. Didn't detract. I think these books are clearly going for something. I think that togetherness is built up from books 1, 2, and 3. I think the thing specifically this book dives into is corporations. And looking at kind of the slave labor being a slave mind of the corporation. And the thing I love, at least about the tidbit here, is kind of Carl points it out, the irony of a mega corporation making corporations the villain in this world. Just the meta concept. Like, think about the real world for a second, how often corporations, like use social engineering and be like, hey, we're the good guys. Or governments go, we're the good guys. Whatever it is, they make themselves look good, but in reality, they are the cause of the problem. And so just seeing how this corporation, this dungeon crawl, cares so little that they just kind of went out there and were like, oh, let's make the corporations the bad guys. And then Carl's looking at this like, But you are them. It doesn't make sense. But it does ring true of like your enemy can even play into the presuppositions you already have, or like the actual truth of it, and they don't care that much. Like they're so nonchalant about what they're doing and their villainy that they're even willing to make a fake example of them also the villains in this book.
Yeah. Even then, it builds into this world of how many competing players there are.
Yeah.
This book, actually, this whole series, doesn't just have the good and evil side. It's has so many different factions working. Like, even the Borant Corporation has its enemies.
Yeah.
And that is kind of – that group has different enemies. And who would have guessed the universe is a wide and – grand place with a bunch of people with different sides.
Yeah.
I enjoy how that's shown here.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you like the little tidbit as well? Of like, it's continued from the other books, but they will not break me.
Yeah. I like how Carl has two catchphrases. One is that he goes for the camera of God damn it, donut.
Yeah.
And then he has one specifically for himself inside of his own head. Mm-hmm. That he doesn't want Borant or to actually twist of, like, you will not break me. Fuck you all.
Yeah.
I like it. It's a simple little mantra in his head, but what makes it good is how he has to keep that secret.
Right.
That's he can't really ever open up about the things that he's going through.
I'm questioning, too. I don't know, because I haven't read beyond this book, and I know another book's coming out. I'm questioning maybe a theory for, hey, Matt, maybe you'll do this, maybe you won't. But the technology is so advanced and you can kind of do what you want in this world. It would be a cool reveal in a later book to be like, oh yeah, by the way, they've had technology, like they can read your thoughts. Like they know you're trying to fight against them, but they don't care. Because the technology that could be introduced, like anything is possible here. You can kind of make any magic work. But for example, the Dungeon Anarchist cookbook in this story here is supposedly only Carl can read from this, which I tend to believe. I'm going to suspend disbelief and like, yes, that's the case, especially because the AI and Borant are fighting each other. That's what makes it an extra level of they actually are separate, because the AI is almost an entity of its own, which I kind of want to talk about characters then, because let's go characters.
Yeah. Characters. Start off with.
Yeah. What'd you give out of 5 stars for characters?
I gave it a 4.
4.25.
Oh!
I think it's really great. You only gave a 4. Wow.
I know.
Wow, I'm shocked.
I'd be willing to change.
Though. I am shocked I gave it higher than you. Because to me, what solidified in this book, so we talk about AI, we can go back to that, but we have our Carl, Donut, Princess Dota, and Katya. Katya became a character of her own this book, and I just had Katya, to give the extra
huge,
boost.
Huge boost to Katya. I love Katya.
Yes.
What a quick turnaround, too.
Yeah.
I especially loved, we talked about the big moment of her killing Hecla, which, huge, great moment, great surprise. I really liked how her relationship with Carl, of Carl kind of being a backseat driver of, like, he's kind of a control freak. And he's used to leadership and just kind of
assumes.
He assumes, like, going, hey, I got this idea, we're doing this. And he just takes charge and, like, assumes people are going to follow him.
Yeah.
And for the most part, his idea is pretty good. So, like, most people do follow him. But even Donut brings up of, Carl, you just kind of, like, told Katya to do things. And you messed with her body. Like, you added all this weight to it. Like, you didn't even ask her permission. You didn't ask her what she wanted to do. You just did it.
And you see why he thinks that, because he's right 99% of the time.
Yeah.
Well, 100, actually.
He's so just, far alive.
So far, he's good.
It's not for Katya going, like, her self-esteem. Mm-hmm. Like, she needs to have agency.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's not right for Carl to just bully his way for his allies of, like, do this. Like, we're doing right. this now. And he's not really the leader, but he's kind of, it's a weird, he's in a quasi leadership role.
Yeah.
No one's officially given him leadership, but
Princess often, Donut's technically the squad leader.
Technically. But I think even Donut says, like, she's like, yeah, she's the leader, but she's kind of says, like, hey, when Carl starts doing something, you just listen. You just do what Carl says sometimes.
Right.
If it's a quiet moment, yeah, fuck around. Who gives a shit? When the chips are down, big moment happens, you listen to Carl. You yes. do what Carl says.
Yeah, why? I think that's why the books get a little better and better with the characters is Carl, Princess Donut become more realized, especially Princess Donut. So two things. Let's finish Katya first.
Hmm.
Katya isn't my favorite character ever. She's good. She's really good and yeah. really improved this book. The other element to her that I enjoyed was that it's pointed out from Sev, who goes, like, Katya is, you're boring. You need to do something more to get the viewers interested in you. And as soon as Sev was mentioning that Katya was boring, I was in my head going, like, oh, yeah, she is. That's the exact thoughts I've had, is she's boring. And now her boring character is used as part of, that's the purpose of Katya's character is to be more dull, to emphasize both Carl, Donut, and then what also emphasizes Carl's humanity there. Like he's given mm-hmm. levels to Katya. He's helping Katya out this whole time. So Katya's character does more for the whole pack as a group, where I think if they had some bombastic character that can appear in the future, sure, like you can have another element, mm-hmm. but Katya is good to also emphasize this whole story. This whole book, book three, is about Carl getting the lessers together, helping out everybody. And Katya emphasizes that whole message, going back to the thought provokingness. But with the characters, Katya perfectly is an example of what Carl's all about. So even though Katya's good on her own now, she lifts up Princess Donut and especially Carl. And then Princess Donut in her own right is starting to get more and more interesting, where we're starting to figure out, okay, she's becoming more of someone on her own. Carl doesn't know everything she's thinking. And Princess Donut's talking to other, messaging other people without Carl being involved. Mm-hmm. So now it's not just, not everything's now about Carl too, because Princess Donut's got this whole thing in her head, which we don't know exactly, because one big plot point, which I don't want to jump the gun to plot, but what do you think about the whole element with the PvP note and how Princess Donut just tosses away Katya's, but Katya sees it because of the back of her head, but that whole plot element, just focusing on Princess Donut's character, what do you think that did for her?
I really love how Princess Donut is in a weird spot of she's still developing as a sentient creature, but she has the memories before. It's like she's still growing, but she's an adult in a way. It's strange. It's a strange position to be in, but as a reader, you feel kind of protective, and you feel, like I felt at least, really sad that Princess Donut has to go through this kind of stuff. And handles it really well, I think, but it's a tough decision to have to face that. One, she killed a person now. She killed a human, and how that messes with her. And now she has to give up that, hey, I need to get rid of these tickets. It's too much of a temptation. Just, yeah.
Life can always use more Cedar Point. And right now, you can get more Cedar Point for less with the Fun Day Bundle for just $74.99. Each bundle gets you admission, parking, and all-day dining for one low price. That means more coasters like Steel Vengeance and more nostalgic fun in the boardwalk area. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
I like it a lot. I did want to jump back to Katya, though,
a moment. Oh, please, yeah.
Something that you're talking about with her character being boring, when Zev brings it up, I just thought about how fucked up that is.
Exactly.
That's the main thing of just, she's trying to survive. Like, she's, so what, she's not a bombastic character? So what that she doesn't have a catchphrase? She's trying to survive, and she's a genuinely kind person. And that should be enough. And you want to talk about thought-provokingness. Shouldn't that be enough? No. What goes on Hollywood is, like, you have to be crazy. You have to be psychotic. It's He had to be high energy to get attention.
We should lower our energy for the rest of this episode to see if people are also succumbing to... Like, you don't need us to sit here and dance, do you?
Nah, they want us to dance. Yeah. Dance, monkeys, dance.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a great point with Katya because she... I, as the reader, I was also looking in book two, at the end of book two, being like, yeah, she's kind of a boring addition, falling into the trap of... what her purpose is.
We are the audience.
Yes. We're entertain us, Carl. Princess Donna, entertain. We're reading on because we enjoy these games as well. Mm-hmm. We are the glorp glorp. That is us.
Glorp 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 glorp.
So that's a great point. And what do you think with Princess Donna becoming a character of her own, but you're mentioning more in the motion section how all the other side characters mm-hmm. are starting to become more real, where Brandon died this book. Was it Brandon who is Chris's brother? You have Brandon becoming more real. Stuff about the AI. What, touch on those characters and just...
How much that hurt Carl, too.
Yeah.
Of what a sad way to find out of reading the death note, basically. Of like this crawler... Like, you're reading a deceased crawler's note. Like, last message.
Yeah.
Oh, it hurt. Yeah. That must just hurt. And you really feel for Carl of... He cares too deeply about a lot of it, about a lot of people. So, I don't know. He's just such a sympathetic character with a big rough exterior, but a real softy on the inside, which makes me love him.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very easy way to show. I've used those terms easy. I'm not saying that what he's doing is easy, but it's a very good way to introduce a character that you can – really get behind. As we've talked about this in previous episodes, of beliefs versus convictions,
mm-hmm.
and all of Matt, all of, sorry, I keep saying Matt for the author, all of Carl's convictions, you see how good of a guy he is, even when he has his goddamn it donut or seems rough on the outside. Sure, we see that's the front he puts on. We see that he doesn't want to talk about his emotions, but on the inside, he's a soft. He does think about his parents, and he does think about, like, oh, when he went to that carnival in book two, or he has these emotional moments he doesn't reveal all the time,
mm-hmm.
and he kind of pushes that aside, but he is a softy.
And I think it's elevated because of the nature of the plot of Carl knows even from book one of if he shows any outward emotions that are actually sensitive to him, it will be exploited exactly. for the show.
Exactly.
And it's not that he's, you know, bottling everything up because he's such a tough guy. No, he knows that if I say something that really bothers me, that's going to be the next prize in the prize box. That's what they're going to do to me. So anything that's actually troubling to him, he has to keep quiet.
I do think that was part of his personality beforehand, too. It's emphasized or magnified mm-hmm. with the dungeon, because I remember, like, the very first chapter before the dungeon, and way back in book one, he still had that rougher exterior. And also when I think it was book two, where there was a little monologue of him talking about his emotions and then going like, ah, but you don't want to hear about that, kind of brushing it aside. So he does mm-hmm. try to push it down a bit just to keep going forward.
Yeah.
That magnified by the dungeon, because he literally can't. Yeah.
It's a combination. Yeah. The dungeon is making it so that his maybe negative tendency is necessary.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, which enjoyable. But you also get to see the Anarchist Cookbook is a good reflection.
Start with plot then.
Yeah, let's go right into the plot.
Would you give plot out of 5 stars?
I gave it a 3. 3 out of 5 stars.
3 out of 5.
I'm giving it that because of the trains. Takes it down a notch or two because I'm neutral. There's some really good stuff, and I think some more disappointing things.
Gotcha.
Brings about there. What did you give?
3.5.
3.5.
3.5. I had to give it good, but I totally get, because I was very... very much confused by the trains. Let's talk about the bad first, because why'd you give it only a 3? This is the lowest cat. It seems like low so far. So why'd you give it a 3 on that train section?
I was confused on where the characters were at. At a certain point, I had to give up on where are these characters? How do we get through this maze of train systems? At a certain point, it was just too much. I'll trust it by the end.
Yeah.
The solution is there. But that's all I got. So, and I'll get further into it with prose and dialogue. It's not just the plot of it. I couldn't see it. When it was described, I couldn't get a clear picture in my head of where they are and how things were. I was very confused. So it's not just the plot structure. It was the writing of it.
Yeah, I definitely put that more in those categories. But for a plot alone, the biggest negative is the trains. And I think Matt Dinneman in the beginning prefaced it with saying, hey, it's confusing. You don't really have to understand it until a moment at the end. Is kind of how I think it, there's a foreword in there that people were mentioning that Matt Dinneman basically talked about this and said, hey, don't worry about it. But still, it is a purposeful choice he made to make this confusing. And that helped. So it helped in the way that, okay, I don't really need to think about it. I can kind of mindlessly walk through this and then maybe I'll get it eventually. Like we've read books before where you're super confused by a world and they go, ah, I just need time. This wasn't one of those. It was confusing from start to finish. And
yeah, by the end, I still don't really understand it. I understand on high level when he explained it, but there's not really much of a eureka moment at the end, which probably should have been if, I don't know. I think it's ultimately a negative, not just a choice.
You're convincing me to maybe lower it even more because another negative as well is the outside of the dungeon stuff. There wasn't a ton of outside developments this book. There was Earth Sound Booth Theater, and there was Audette at the end. But the outside stuff we got with the Anarchist Cookbook, we got to see more perspective with the previous crawlers. But I love that outside action that happens. I love to see like when we get to go to those interviews and see what development happens. But with all that bad, the reason I felt like I had to give it some credit here is so the plot decision to kill Hecla. Completely wowing me, emotionally hit, but also just the way that was set up was a wow moment. And then also all the dungeon things that happens, even though I was confused by the world around me, again, we'll get into that category, but the character to character, the plot moments that happened. So Hecla dying or Brandon, Carl reflecting on Brandon's death and the PvP note tension, what's going to happen between Princess Donut and Katya. Is Princess Donut hiding something from Carl? So all the in-dungeon stuff I was more invested in. All the in-dungeon events, like Maestro coming at the end. I'm like, oh, a villain that I somewhat care about coming in at the end. Like, yeah. I'm actually interested at this end point to see what happens versus like the random boss they have to fight and kill. So I was impressed by the actual dungeon stuff that was more that made more that shocked me more and kept me invested more in the dungeon, even though everything around's like, I don't know where we are, but this is cool. So that's why, that's why I liked it enough. But that didn't do it enough for you to be like, ah, this is good.
Yeah. I think it's enough a negative that I have to keep it at like 3 at a neutral.
Fair.
But there were some good stuff of, I still remember the scene. And this is, I think, more plot-centric humor rather than just pure writing, like a joke.
Yeah.
But the situation where they need the hands of a certain creature to get the carts working. And so they keep killing this NPC over and over. That's great. Oh, God.
It's tragic and great.
It's tragically funny.
Yeah.
That's like just how it's described is funny, but it's also just so messed up.
Yeah.
Like, please stop killing. And so it starts off messed up, then it becomes a little funny, and then it becomes really interesting by the end of Carl explaining to him, like, hey, look, I understand. Your NPC, and like breaks through the NPC program and say, like, I need to do this. I need your hands to actually fight these people,
right?
Like, who's oppressing both of us. And it's like, all right, we'll make it quick. Like, how many more do you need?
Yeah, another. I love that. It's more plot-centric humor because of the keep cutting off. So yeah, this is why I'm mixed with all three books, books 1, 2, and 3, of when each one does something better. To me, what book 2 did better is the outside world stuff was just, oh, fun and great and all that. Book 3 does the dungeon moments better. to me. Or like, sure, I like the dungeon itself. So to me, I'm like, man, it did that really, really well.
But even then, even the fun fight stuff. Like I love how much his shield, his like shield bubble, is probably one of his the level one thing that he's using to expert degree of he produces a shield inside the moving train and the shield stays, and so it just mows down the train moves and mows down everything. I love plot stuff like that, of how that just carries forward and the creativity.
Definitely. But then again, I totally agree with your negative. I agree as negative as you do, but I was just more impressed by the dungeon stuff, I guess, because the that is a big negative, the aha moment at the end, the me not understanding where I am in relation to other things. Just, I still enjoyed enough of it. But because we're getting, want to go right into our world building.
Sure.
For world building, what'd you give it out of 5 stars?
I gave it a 4. 4 out of 5 stars.
This is our biggest difference.
Yeah.
I gave it a 2.5 stars. this is definitely going to be our biggest disagreement.
I think we categorize things a little differently. So where I'm so I put my negatives of the train stuff into plot. Are you putting the train things and the dungeon itself into world building?
100%.
Okay, so that's the difference. Where I'm factoring in, thinking about the development of the AI, the outward systems of the Orc Empires, the sister of the Maestro, is she helping?
Well, I gotta argue our rating system here, because when we're rating world building, it's like our 5 out of 5 is suspension of disbelief, like complete immersion, and our 1 is like distracting and like lost immersion, like confusion essentially. So to me, when like looking at the world itself, I'm going like, how much do I how visualized is the world, or how immersed am I literally in the world, and I can't even picture where I am. So I'm putting all the negatives there of like the world building to me, even though the AI stuff good and interesting.
See, I was immersed while still being confused.
Okay.
I'm immersed, like I'm sucked into these characters and the systems and the people, all of it working together of keeping me engaged in the world. But I'm confused on the specific exact where we are, of how this dungeon works. Carl's confused, I'm confused. And when they figure it out at the end, I'm like, okay. Right. that feels more like a plot issue.
I think it's a plot issue.
It's a plot and a writing issue. To me, I put that in prose. It's hard for me to picture exactly how this is working. But in terms of world building, I didn't believe that the world is not real. Like, all the elements of the train level, of it being a metaphor for this corporation takeover, and it's some, galactic propaganda machine. That aspect of it works really well. It sells me this world and this level. I'm sold. It's just hard for me to
picture it.
I bought the painting. The painting's a little blurry, but I bought it. I purchased this. Just a little blurry.
I would say to me that blurry painting is a blurry world, because I'm so confused where I am in locations, which I did negatively impact for plot, but for we just put in different categories. But we'll have to figure this out when we rate future things. Because when I was looking at my confusion as well, I do give it credit for the AI stuff or the interesting elements, but to me, I was losing immersion, as in it was so confusing that I no longer pictured really Carl. I just pictured trains. And when I'm picturing
my trains, mind is just trains.
Imagine this choo-choo. That was all I was thinking. And so for me, it's not a really immersive world if I'm just thinking, oh, there's trains. To me, that's a very I was disappointed, because in the previous books as well with the world, the outside scope of the world expanded, and we started to figure out more of the inner workings, like, okay, the Nagas and then the Borant and their motivations. And there's all that the stuff going for, but also the dungeon itself. I could visualize everything in a way that I understood where I was and location, everything. But now in this one, I'm just like, okay, there's when talk about the world building for this, there's, I don't know. I guess what I was asking, how good was the world building? Well, I couldn't see myself in the world. So I wasn't really immersed in this world for this book. So, but again, I think next book will not have this issue. I think it's very specific to this book.
You're gonna You're gonna love the next, like mainly the next two books.
Okay.
It gets better and better.
Got it.
Book six, we're gonna have similar conversation.
Okay.
Similar, okay. Not the same.
Okay.
Same. But different.
I don't understand you, just like this world, but okay, I'm with you. The one analogy I did enjoy that pictured me, but this is more prose-wise, I just want to jump the gun. I just love this explanation.
Spaghetti?
Yeah, it was great. I was like, so it's like, imagine the train lines are all spaghetti, and then you stick a fork in the middle, and you twirl it together. And then, so the ones toward the center are more structured, and the outside are more amiss. I'm like, I can picture that.
Then fold at the curve.
Yes, yeah. I could picture that. So I thought it was a great descriptor for a very confusing world for my part. But yeah. Want to go prose because I jumped the gun on prose. I'm so sorry.
A little bit.
Okay, prose. What did you give prose?
I gave it a 3 as well.
You gave it a 3?
Neutral.
I gave it 3.25. Above average prose. And the 0.25 is from that pasta analogy. If you describe pasta to an Italian and it works, you get the approval.
Yeah.
It gets the Italian Austin approval.
You get at least a 0.25 points.
The pasta pizza, the spaghetti, the spaghetti. So you gave it neutral for this. You gave way higher in the previous. You gave 3.75, I think, in the previous two books. So what was the detriment? Was it because you were confused?
I put the train. Specifically of I didn't know where I was, and I put that into prose.
Got it.
How I'm described the visuals of where I am was confusing, and I couldn't really picture it. That's where I put it in prose. Mm. I think part of your prose is being able to not only clearly show where your character is, but when in relation to other things. So, like, do you know the passage of time that's going on? Are you confused? Like, where a character's standing and how are things working? And do you see the world? Is everything kind of a shade of gray? Like, what do you see in your mind's eye? Well, I think Matt Dinneman missed a step on this one. In comparison to the rest of the books is not that clear. So I put this in mostly in prose.
Yeah, I think the prose in this book is similar to the previous two, where I think even with the descriptors in book one and two, a lot of it, the way that the characters interact and the characters are described, or when the maestro comes out, I think all of that is done just as well as the previous two. I don't think there's any improvement or any downgrade from the previous two. I had the same, I think it was the same master, the same expertise as the previous two and how he described things, where he still has those info dumps, still kind of works. He has some fun lines, quirky prose to it. I definitely put that more in the world for the negatives of the like the world building itself. But for prose, I think I also want to mention that the what I haven't mentioned in the previous two, I think you have, but the character voices are always really special. And that's something to give a little bit of benefit to the prose of how you know when someone's saying one line that that's them. But when talking about Matt Dinneman,
that's a really good point. Now, how much of that is Matt Dinneman? How much of that is Jeff Hayes?
Exactly. So it's so hard to rate this prose other than, like, I think it's above average. He does a good job. Nothing crazy. I don't think that any other authors, because when we're rating prose, it's going, how much of a craft is it that others try to emulate toward? Or do they have an author's voice unique to their own that's also expertly done, like Terry Pratchett, for like Robin Howe, I'm sure has amazing prose, or all these different authors that you know, oh, that's this author writing this. I think other people could replicate Matt Dinneman's prose fairly easily, but he does have his special moments where he shines. You got to give him enough credit there. He has his fun time.
Well, especially because he's your gateway drug to lit RPGs and that genre of books.
Yeah.
This is a book that most people can pick up and read and start in the genre.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I would imagine there's probably a lot of lit RPG authors that will want to emulate Matt Dinneman. Because
definitely
he straddles that line so well.
I've heard from other people that they can't read lit RPG, but they can read Dungeon Crawler Carl. This one does it for them. Because apparently a lot of lit RPGs aren't so character-focused. It's just kind of leveling up.
Yeah. From what I've heard mostly and little bits that I've read-ish is a little bit of your self-insert fantasy stuff. Of it's fun to see the progression, and it's yeah, that's it.
Carl's literally your self-insert, though. You are Carl. You do realize that. You,
I take that compliment. No,
it is a compliment. You are Carl. You are the, you know, he's got a gruff beard on the outside, but on the inside, he's got a heart to him.
Soft.
When it comes to planning things, you're just like, everyone's going to listen to me, right? I'm building thing. And then, like, I'm doing thing, and we're just going to do it. And then it works almost all the time. Until it doesn't.
Until it doesn't.
So you are not 100% Carl. Carl's one to emulate. You're almost there.
See, I would have died on level two. Carl lives. That's the thing.
Would you have died at level two, you think?
I think I would have lived first level. I think I would have survived past level one.
I could see that. Level two. What was level two?
Ooh, no. I would die on level three. The quests. Quests would kill me.
Oh, yeah. You'd have been like, what the? Yeah.
No, that would.
You're not a rule follower.
Thing is, I'm also like,
when you go into a video game, you're not a quest person, are you?
Kind of. I hate quests.
You just want to go. Oh, I'm in Zelda. You want me to do? No, I'm gonna go fucking fly.
Yeah, exactly. I still haven't beaten Breath of the Wild,
and you don't have to. You have fun the way you want to, Carl. I mean, Rich.
I don't think I've, like, in Minecraft. I don't think I've ever beaten the Ender Dragon.
Oh, really?
I just build stuff. I just go around and I play around with redstone. Like, I would get a quest on level three and just go, okay, that's neat, but have you seen this cool hammer fist I have? I'm going to go fuck around with this stuff.
I'm going to go fuck around with this and my two viewers. No one else is enjoying it. It's like, ha-pa-pow!
It's like, Zev telling me, like, you got to be more interesting. You keep messing around with the magic system and people are bored. Well, I'm having fun. I'm sorry.
You would need a Princess Donut to push you through and be like, Rich, you got to do something here. We need to get moving.
Oh, yeah. I'm thinking of a great team. This none of you guys know, but I think Luke and I would make a fantastic team.
Oh, would you?
Luke would be my Princess Donut. He has that animation, and he pulls a crowd.
He'd also be willing to pull the trigger. He would have some PvP tags next to him. He would.
But the thing is, I think his emotion and his stage presence, along with just my kind of curiosity, creativity of it, I think would make a good team of
it. You would make a good team.
Yeah.
That reminds me of one character I don't think we talked about that we need to. We won't put this in any category, but Frankie. Frank.
Oh,
and he gave the ring to Carl.
Yes.
This was a big
this
plot.
Was this scene.
This was a massive plot point and a massive character
here's
moment.
Here's the thing. I didn't say it because I didn't know if it was this book or the next book.
No, it was this book.
It was this book.
This was a big moment. Again, you know, to elevate the plot for me. I think it's a good plot, Rich. I'm just saying.
That's pretty good.
That's a pretty good point there. But that scene where, oh my God, his character was great this book, where he just kind of dejected and lost and wants to get one last piece of revenge and gives this ring to Carl, which sets up for, it's either level 6 or 9, I forget which, where this will come back to play where the factions fight or just this.
I believe 6 and 9.
6 and 9, okay.
But yeah, and also it's a little bit more complex on who the revenge is for.
Right.
Because part of it is like, yeah, is it revenge against Carl? Sure, but he also said he kind of forgives him.
Right.
I'm like, hey, look, I get it. Like, the anger's out of me at this point.
You know what?
You didn't mean to kill him.
Yes.
We've done all it. So was the revenge against his ex-wife.
Mm-hmm.
And he's giving this to kind of fuck her over.
Right.
But how he's a tragic villain, a messed up character doing messed up things, but to some degree, you have to have some sympathy of it's literally this game system forcing him to do these things.
Right.
Not many people are strong enough to hold their convictions past, like, the point of a gun. He has Frank has a gun to his head on to do these awful things. And, like, probably most people, he cracked. Now, you know, how far he goes with it, I don't know. still a bad character, bad person, but in other contexts, he probably wouldn't be. I don't know. It's just kind of sad thinking just the whole setup of him giving the ring to Carl and just drinking himself to death in the bar and like letting right. the level pass without him.
Right.
And him admitting he tried to do it last well, level then, and he couldn't. He
Chris kill him then, right? Mm-hmm. And then killed him? Right.
Yeah.
So I will say I up my plot to 3.75 because I think it does a lot of really good things here. I had to up it a
you know
little
what?
Bit. I upped it.
Just because that 3.25.
Yeah.
Let's change that here.
There we go. We both upped it by 0.25.
Yeah.
There we go.
No, all the stuff with Chris, I'm like, what the hell's going on with Chris?
Yeah, a lot of intrigue. And I like that we got to see Frank because from book one that was set up, and I was wondering, mm-hmm. Where's that plot point going? And I like that. We're getting more payoffs. I like the payoffs.
That's the one. Matt Dinneman's doing a great thing of setting up plenty, but also equally giving us enough payoff that's satisfying.
Yeah.
And not doing too much of one or the other.
That didn't happen as much in book two for my liking, but this book mm-hmm. it did.
Yeah. Oh, no. Book two was a lot of setup.
Yes.
But still. Yeah. Overall, pretty good.
Yeah. Overall, pretty good. Well, that was a Dungeon Crawler Carl review, book three.
I can't wait for this one to be number 10 on our views.
Oh, definitely number 10, and I'm already 5 hours into book four, so.
Ah!
Yeah, I just started listening to it. I was like, all right, let's keep going.
Good. We're going to talk a little bit about book four after this episode ends then.
We'll see you relatively soon about Dungeon Crawler, but join us next episode where we're talking about a thing.
Stuff. Stuff and things. Maybe books. Maybe religion.
Ooh.
Maybe morality,
ooh.
But hopefully books.
Mm. Well, did the episode where we talked about porn come out yet?
Maybe.
Not even kidding. We had a whole up. That's coming. You'll see that
We tried to talk about Harry Potter, and then it went straight to porn.
Yeah. Bye, everybody.
Bye, y'all.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get juicy red, white, or black seedless grapes for $1.49 a pound with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.